2. Oh, shit, I said. I said it a couple of times. There was no human around to hear me. Then I let the screen door slam shut and turned around and sat down on the steps of the deck. Grandma had lived about 30 minutes out of Ponsboro, which is southwest of Pittsboro, which is northwest of Goldsboro, because nobody in the late 1700s could think of an original name to save their lives. North Carolina's a weird state, because there are all these roads that are framed by trees, and so you literally do not know how remote the area is. You're just driving through trees. The woods, once you cut them down, grow up again in a dense tangle of kudzu and buckthorn and honeysuckle and loblolly pines. You can't see through them. At any given moment, you could be surrounded by 1,000 acres of uninhabited woods, or you could be 30 feet from a business park full of IT professionals. There's no way to tell. Get out around Ponsboro, and you're more likely to be near the 1,000 acres of woods. There's some weird little dips in the landscape, not full hills exactly, and nothing you'd call a holler, but things fold over on themselves and wrinkle up, and you get weird little bluffs cut by things that are a creek in Pittsburgh and a crick down here. I usually call it a stream to save argument. Grandma's house hadn't been that remote when she'd bought it. There had been a couple of farm families nearby and a pack of hippies across the road. But people left the farm for the city, and the pastures grew up into the tangle of woods I mentioned before, and the hippies got old, and most of the kids moved out. I saw a car parked over there when I drove up, but that doesn't mean anything in the South. It wasn't up on blocks, though, so maybe someone was still living there. She'd had nothing kind to say about the hippies, but that was no surprise. I'd passed 1 or 2 trailers on the way up, and there might be more back in the woods. For all I know, I could be surrounded by people. Sitting on a dead woman's porch, though, I didn't much feel like it. I felt like the only other living person on Earth was my dad, up north, and the world was empty except for the two of us who had to deal with what my grandmother had left behind. Bongo was still in the truck. He stuck his head out the window and whined. I sighed. I haven't described the house yet, have I? I probably should. It was a big old southern rambler with a red tin roof. The tin roof was in good shape and the walls were solid, but the white paint was starting to wear off. You could see bits of wood under it. The wraparound porch was weathered gray wood, and the steps creaked when I walked on them. There was a carport, but no garage. Somebody had filled the back of the carport with firewood a long time ago. The whole carport had slumped like a badly made cake. I didn't even think about parking my truck in it. The underside of the porch roof was painted pale blue. Haint blue, they call it. The theory is that if a ghost comes up to the door, it'll look up and see the blue ceiling and think it's the sky and drift up into it. I don't know how that's supposed to work. But I've also heard that it's supposed to fool wasps the same way. So maybe wasps and ghosts are getting muddled up there. You don't want either nesting in the porch anyhow. Because it's the South, there was a thin layer of green algae on all the vinyl surfaces, around the edges of the windows and whatnot. There were long, squiggly lines etched through the green where the slugs had crawled at night. There's not much you can do about either one, except scrub things off with bleach occasionally. Nobody had been through here with bleach for a long time. The porch was covered in all the usual yard work detritus, a rake and a trowel and a faded bag of fertilizer granules. An old pair of gloves lay discarded on the rocker. Of course, there was a rocking chair. I told you we were in the South. Everything was tied together with ropes of cobwebs. The rake handle was practically glued to the porch supports. It was one of the ones with a hollow metal handle, and there was a big web right around the end, which meant that there was a spider living in the handle. I made a mental note to buy a new rake. That one belonged to the spider now. None of this was why I started swearing. I swore because when I unlocked the front door and opened up the house, the light fell on a stack of newspapers. Behind it was another stack of newspapers. Behind that was another stack. They were tied up neatly with string, and there was a pile of magazines next to that, and another pile, and another, and oh shit, Grandma was a hoarder. I took a deep breath and scrubbed my face with my hands. Maybe it wasn't as bad as I feared. Maybe it was just one room. It's never just one room, my brain said, and of course it isn't, but maybe just this once. Yeah, no, it wasn't just one room. It wasn't awful. She didn't collect cats, thank God. So the house hadn't turned into one of those horrible biohazards with urine on every surface and burying beetles scuttling under the furniture. And she wasn't the sort of person who hoarded food, so there wasn't 2-year-old garbage everywhere. Dad had taken the trash out when he took her to the home, and then he'd come back and emptied out the refrigerator. He hadn't defrosted the freezer. I could tell by the dried circle of water stains on the floor where it had leaked out when the power was shut off. But honestly, if you have to take your 99-year-old mother out of her house and put her in a home while she's calling you every name in the book, I'll cut you some slack on remembering the freezer. He never said that she called him every name in the book. I'm just assuming on this one. Still, it could have been worse. The newspapers were piled up, and magazines were stacked 5 feet high, but you could still get to the living room furniture. There were places to sit. When I flipped the light on, it looked like a very cluttered room, not like an alien topography. The place was a terrible fire trap, though, all that paper everywhere. It was a miracle Grandma hadn't burned the place down by accident. Oh, God, if only. I don't wish even an evil old bat like her to die by fire. Truly, I don't. But if she could have passed peacefully in her sleep and then the house burned down a couple of hours later, that would have been fine. And I'd still be able to sleep at night. The hoard was somewhat organized. I'll give her that. I went from room to room, listening to the floorboards creak. There were narrow paths between the stacks. Magazines and newspapers in the living room, Tupperware and bags full of other bags in the kitchen. It got worse as I got farther back into the house, though. The bathroom was a jumble of ancient shampoo bottles and body lotions with the caps melted on. The toilet? Well, pray God the well pump had survived the years of inactivity without locking up. The stairs to the second story were completely jammed with garbage bags. I prodded one with my foot. The contents moved like cloth, but smelled like mice. One of the closet doors was wedged open. The inside was a solid block of Christmas decorations, old coats, and unlabeled white jugs. The tiny bit of floor that I could see had a white crust over it where the jugs had leaked. There were 3 closed doors off the hallway that probably led to bedrooms. I had originally been planning on sleeping in one of those bedrooms, but Christ only knew what was being stored in them. The whole place stank of must and mice and silence. Bungo barked. The noise jerked me out of my increasing despair, and I went back outside. It was an overcast day, but the sky seemed very bright. I let Bongo out of the truck and grabbed his leash. You can't let coonhounds off the leash, not ever. They'll smell a rabbit and wind up in the next county. I owned more ropes and harnesses and tie-outs and carabiners than a dedicated bondage enthusiast. Okay, Okay, fine. I've heard of dog owners who have hounds that are so responsive that they will heal beautifully with no lead at all. Those are smarter owners than me and smarter dogs than Bongo. But we do fine by each other, and that's the important thing. Bongo went sniffing and snuffling around the edge of the porch, over into the bushes, back to the porch. I let him follow his nose. I didn't have anywhere to go, and I didn't want to open one of those bedroom doors before I absolutely had to. We went over to the carport. The woodpile in the back was probably at least 80% spiders at this point, and shared a generator that dated from the Nixon administration. I looked up the side of the house, to the windows on the upper story, and I could see something pressed against them. Boxes, maybe. Or furniture. 2 stories worth of stuff. I let out a heartfelt groan, and Bongo looked back to make sure he wasn't doing anything wrong. "It's not you," I told him. "You're fine." He peed on the woodpile by way of agreement and ambled around the back of the house. The porch wrapped clear around to the back on 3 sides. The back section was screened off to keep bugs out, but there were holes in the screens where something had gotten in. Bongo went immediately on alert, which probably meant that the holes were from squirrels. Trees pressed in on 3 sides of the garden, loblolly pine and pin oak and tulip tree. Aunt Kate is a botanist. When I was growing up, she would constantly interrupt herself to reel off the names of passing plants. As a result, I can follow extremely fractured conversations, and I also know common trees on sight, the way most people know dog breeds. There were some saplings making inroads around the edges, and the grass had grown high and rank in sunny spots. The shrubbery was too dense to walk through in most places, but the right-hand corner, under the oak, was nothing but dead leaves. The woods behind it hadn't been cleared recently because I could see quite a way back there before a stand of holly trees blocked the view. Mostly, I saw even more dead leaves and a couple of large rocks. Not exciting for anyone, except possibly Aunt Kate. The backyard had contained a garden at some point, and bits of the deer fence were still there. The fence posts leaned drunkenly, with chicken wire bunched up between them. Mint and oregano had run riot everywhere, and every step we took kicked up a delicious smell. I had a strong urge to pull some of the weeds, but I wasn't here to garden. Pity. I might have enjoyed putting the garden to rights. More than I would enjoy excavating the house, anyhow. How had I not known she was a hoarder? I'd only been a kid when I'd visited, but kids remember things. There hadn't been the piles of newspapers then. The counters in the kitchen had appliances, not stacks of Tupperware. A memory surfaced of Grandma washing Ziploc bags and drying them with a hairdryer. Dad saying, "She grew up during the Depression, Mouse. A lot of folks who lived through that have a hard time throwing anything away." Well, the signs had been there. And sometime in the last decade or two, she'd just gone over the edge. I pulled out my phone and looked at it, thinking of calling Dad. He could have warned me. He did say it was a mess and that it was bad. Yeah, but his definition of a mess and mine are apparently a lot different. There was no cell signal. I cursed my carrier and shoved the phone back in my pocket. If you're thinking that she was going mad in the house alone for 40 years, like Miss Havisham, don't. Dad paid for caregivers, and he went down to visit her fairly regularly when he was still able to get around. But the caregivers got harder and harder to find as she drove them off, and eventually there was just the woman who took her into town. Maybe that's when it got bad. Maybe that woman didn't go into the house. Maybe nobody'd known the state the place was in. Bongo wanted to go under the porch steps. "Nobody," I said, leading him past. He looked longingly at the hollow under the stairs. There might be a possum he could lick. "I know," I said. I'm the worst. We finished our circle around the house. There was a set of double doors that probably led down to a root cellar. Jesus, who knew what I'd find down there? Bongo's tail was wagging good-naturedly as we finished the circuit. One of his ears had flipped over along the way. Let me fix your ear. More wagging. I tied him out to the railing on the front steps. He could probably find a way to twist the leash around, but I wasn't going to be more than 30 or 40 feet away. And anyway, I suspected that I'd be coming out of the house frequently, just to be surrounded by clean air instead of junk. He flumped down on the porch and looked tragically at me. I gave him a chew toy, and he began gnawing on it and making terrible canine faces of pleasure. You know, thinking about it now, if Bongo had been scared of the house, I might have left. I was right on the edge. I could have called Dad and said it was beyond my ability. It was too full. It was a mess. And he should just hire one of those companies that deal with hoarder houses and get them to drag it all to a landfill. But Bongo thought the place was grand. There were things to sniff. There might be squirrels. And I hadn't seen anything terrible yet. Just stuff. Nothing I couldn't fix with a couple hundred garbage bags and directions to the county dump. I had a pickup truck. I had a lot of irritation at my recent ex to work out, ideally with manual labor. I might as well give it a try. Which just goes to show that my dog and I were both as sensitive to that other world as rocks, and probably that we deserve each other. I went back into town to get garbage bags and a couple pairs of sturdy gloves. Ponsboro actually has a little downtown. They'd love to be like Southern Pines, 2 hours away, which is so quaint it makes your teeth hurt. The rich country club people all go there to spend money, so you can have antique stores instead of junk shops and a really good independent bookstore and little shops that sell nothing but scented candles and fancy doorknobs. Southern Pines is in the Sandhills, though, and it's a lot easier to put a golf course there. So Ponsboro's downtown isn't nearly as ritzy, despite their best efforts. But they do have a good coffee shop, and a bad diner, and a hardware store that hasn't been eaten by one of the big chains. I went to that last one for garbage bags and gloves and about a dozen containers of those little bleach-soaked wipes. And yes, a scented candle. It didn't matter what it smelled like, it was bound to be better than the smell of musty house. I picked up a cheap pair of sheets, too. They were red flannel with a Christmas tree pattern, and since it was now late March, they were on deep, deep clearance. I felt weird enough about sleeping in a dead woman's house without sleeping on her sheets. Even if I found a clean set in a closet, they would smell like the house, or worse, like her. I'd rather have Christmas trees. The barista at the coffee shop was a cheerful goth woman with hair dyed black in back and hot pink in front. She skillfully extracted the reason I was in Ponsboro, how long I was staying, and who my grandmother was. Oh, she said when I said her name. Old Mrs. Cotgrave? She's dead? Hard to believe, isn't it? I said into my latte. She used to come in here. She was... I could see her trying to decide whether or not to be diplomatic. A raging bitch, I imagine, I said. I'm sorry. The barista grinned. Well, yes, and a lousy tipper. I'm sorry about that, too, I sighed. It wasn't just you. She was an awful person. Some people are, she said sympathetically, and gave me a warm-up on the latte when I got up to leave. I made a mental note to come back. And not just because the coffee shop had Wi-Fi. Bongo enjoyed the drive back. He stood with his front feet on the central armrest and gazed out the front. If I get in an accident, you're going to go right through the windshield, you know. He ignored this. I looked in the rearview mirror and got a great view of the dog's forehead. Once we got back to the house, I let him come inside with me. He walked around, sniffing. The smell of mice was much too exciting, and I had to haul him away from the bags on the staircase. Oh well, it's not like he can make much more of a mess. I pulled on the gloves. They were good, solid work gloves, men's size medium, not the crappy little floral print things they try to sell to women. With the gloves and the trash bags, I felt obscurely armored. Whatever horrors awaited, at least I wouldn't have to touch them. I lit the scented candle. It was called Berries and Dreams, and I am sad to say that it had been the best of the selection and the only one that did not involve patchouli in some fashion. It smelled like the lip gloss I'd worn in third grade, strawberry, with notes of wax. It was still better than mouse crap. My first order of business was to find a bedroom. I was waiting on emails to be able to work on an editing job, so I wasn't losing money at the moment. But if I had to spend the whole time in a motel room, I'd start burning the bank account at both ends. Motels that allow dogs charge a lot of money for the privilege. The door at the back of the hallway had boxes piled to knee-high in front of it, so I wasn't hopeful about it. But the other two were reasonably clear. There was a rampart of plastic storage bins between the two doors, reaching to the ceiling, but you could get by them if you turned sideways. I pulled open the first door and then slumped against the doorframe with a groan. Christ, the doll room. I'd forgotten all about that. She'd had those awful china dolls with the painted eyes, which were bad enough, but she'd really liked the newborn dolls. The ones all made up to look like realistic babies, except that when something's that realistic, it just looks dead. The whole damn room was full of dead babies. Most of them were still in boxes, but she'd taken a bunch out, too. Then she'd stacked the other dolls in front of them, so all you'd see were horrible, hyper-realistic faces peeking out from behind the edges of boxes or piled together. It looked like a monument to infanticide and also to the astonishing holding capacity of clear plastic bins. On the far side of the room, over the sea of babies, was a tall built-in storage cabinet running to the ceiling. The china dolls stood inside that, in their little shoes and little coats, their hair dusty and immaculate. I remembered her taking me into the room, you could see the floor then, and showing me the dolls, and then telling me sternly that they were not for playing. I can still recall feeling embarrassed and resentful about it, because I wouldn't have wanted to play with her stupid dolls anyway. I much preferred stuffed animals, and china dolls are creepy, no matter what age you are. They hadn't gotten any less creepy. They stood in the case like objects of worship, surrounded by infant sacrifices. There is probably a sum of money that could have incited me to sleep in that room. I am not wealthy, and I can be bought, but it would be up in the thousands. I'm easy, but not cheap. Since no one was appearing to proffer large sums of money, I shut the door to the room again and leaned against it, shuddering. The old woman, wandering around the house for years, buying dolls that looked like infants. For the first time, I started to feel a little guilty. Possibly you think that I should have been feeling guilty long before this. Maybe you think I'm a terrible person. My grandmother, after all, had lived alone for years and had died unloved. She was my blood kin. I should have been coming down to visit her and, I don't know, reading aloud to her or something. That seems like it would have been an excellent way to get a book thrown at my head. You have to understand, it's just not how my family works. We don't stay where we aren't wanted. Grandma had made it clear that she wanted nothing to do with me, and if somebody wants nothing to do with you, you leave. We are a family that divorces quietly and without contest. If someone says they are done with us, we take them at their word. But the corollary to that, I suppose, is that we return just as quickly and with just as little fanfare. My dad and my stepmother, Sheila, were separated for nearly 7 years, and then one night she called him up and said, "Please come get me." And he did, and they've been together ever since. I resented that at the time, but she takes good care of Dad, and after a while, that was the only thing that mattered. If Grandma had called me up in the middle of the night at any time in all those years and said, "Mouse, I need you here," I would have come. I would have gotten in the car and driven all night. I didn't like her, and I didn't love her, but I would have come because she'd asked. But she never asked. Should I have known somehow? But I hadn't seen her since I was 7, and she babysit me after my mom died when Dad couldn't afford a sitter. That had been so sufficiently awful that I'd been relieved to go live with my mom's sister, Aunt Kate, even if it meant that I saw Dad only on weekends. I hadn't spoken to her since I was 17 and called her to ask if she wanted to attend my high school graduation. She had snorted at me and said that she didn't know why I was bothering to graduate. I was Catholic trash and was just going to get married and squeeze out babies for the rest of my life. I remember that very clearly, mostly because it was so odd. Yes, I was Catholic, more or less, but that just meant that Aunt Kate had saint cards shoved in the edges of the bathroom mirrors and that we went to Mass on Easter. We hadn't managed Christmas Mass in years. I had never been confirmed, never gone to confession, couldn't say a Hail Mary if my life depended on it. I wasn't offended. I wasn't even angry. It didn't make sense. Grandma might as well have yelled at me for being from Pennsylvania, or for having wavy hair, or for walking upright instead of on all fours. I took the phone away from my ear and stared at it, baffled. I could hear her still talking, tinny and distant through the receiver. Then, this was in the days of landlines, I set it back in the cradle and shook my head. If you think that I'm harboring some deep resentment here, I'm really not. I'd called because Aunt Kate had said, somewhat doubtfully, that I should. I hadn't thought about her in years. She didn't do holidays. She was more like a particularly unpleasant teacher remembered from my grade school years than a relative. She'd obviously wanted nothing to do with me. So it had seemed the polite thing to do was to oblige. I don't know. All I know is that she never asked for anything. Maybe it's genetic in my family. Dad never asked for anything, so now that he had, I'd move heaven and earth if I needed to. And that's why I was here, in this horrible house stuffed full of baby dolls and ancient Tupperware and mouse-stained clothes, because he'd asked. Perhaps I am a terrible person, but give me what little credit I deserve. I was here. The second door was not as viscerally unsettling. Not many things could be. Even a room full of taxidermy would be less creepy, and Grandma wasn't into taxidermy. Nevertheless, it was a sad room, and that's because it was her bedroom. There was a road through the piles of boxes. The bed itself was covered in old clothes and newspapers, but I could see a deep hollow where she'd slept. The sheets bunched up around it. It hadn't come out, even after 2 years of absence. Clothes lay draped over every surface, interspersed with boxes of coat hangers. The closet had a folding door that had come off its track, but was held in place by a tower of shoe boxes. There was a large box next to the door, unopened. The outside proclaimed it as a foolproof closet organization method. The bottom was stained where water had soaked into it. Or maybe it was mouse urine. I made a noise in my throat. I couldn't tell you whether it was a laugh or a sob, and I shut the door again. I decided that if the third door didn't work, I'd sleep on the couch. I could have cleared off that bed, but it would have been like sleeping in my grandmother's grave. Even though she'd died hundreds of miles away, in a home, with my father checking on her all the time, I felt her presence in that room. If she was a ghost, she would be an unquiet one. The third door took some work to get to. I nearly abandoned the attempt. If the hallway was this clogged, the room was probably wall-to-wall boxes of Ziploc bags and commemorative plates. I started to push the boxes out of the way, but felt a stab of guilt. Moving boxes around inside the house wasn't going to help, so I picked up each one and dragged it into the living room. One was full of coat hangers. That went in the back of the truck immediately. One was full of papers, but a quick look told me they were all coupons and penny saver mailings turning yellow-gray with age. I riffled it briefly, but no stock certificates fell out. Well, a woman can dream. There was a stack of empty shoeboxes all wedged together, which went out. One of the bottom boxes had a shoe. It was not a very good shoe. At the very bottom was a carpet steamer. Thankfully, it had wheels because I could barely lift the thing. I dropped it on my foot getting it down the porch steps, and Bongo was treated to the sound of me swearing a blue streak.
"Roof,"
he said. I ignored this commentary on my language and wrestled the carpet steamer into the back of the truck at great personal cost to my back. At last, the door was clear. It stuck when I tried to open it, as if it had not opened for a long time, but I wedged my foot against the bottom and pushed. It swung inward, into a nearly empty room. After my first astonished glance, it became obvious that the room wasn't quite empty. It had a bed and a nightstand and a chair. There was a painting over the bed and a few framed photographs on the walls. But compared to the rest of the house, it seemed absolutely bare. The hardwood floor had a thick layer of dust, but no boxes piled in it. The mice had come in, found nothing of interest, and left again. "Oh," I said out loud. "Oh, right." It was Cockgrave's room. Of course. He had died so long ago. I suppose I had thought that she would clear it out, use it as storage, and yet it was empty. Sheets had been turned back on the bed as if someone had just gotten up. Except for the layer of dust, it could have been abandoned only an hour before. It hadn't occurred to me as a child that my step-grandfather's den had been his bedroom as well, that he had not been sleeping in a bed with my grandmother when he died. I wonder if they started that way, or if he moved out eventually. Well, the vagaries of Grandma's second marriage were not my concern, and probably none of my business. "But it does make my life easier," I told the absent Cockgrave. It was easier to talk out loud. It made some sound in that house, which was much too quiet, except for mice and Bongo working on his chew toy on the porch. I really needed to buy a radio or something. "Replace the sheets, and a normal person can sleep in here." I went to the window and opened it. The wood had swollen, but after some banging, much like the door, I managed to push it open. The screens were still intact. Bongo sat up and came over to the window. He licked the screen and seemed puzzled that it tasted like wire. "You're not smart," I told him. He wagged his tail and licked the screen again, on the off chance that it had become tasty. I opened the nightstand drawer. It was full of the usual detritus that accumulate in drawers: old tweezers, broken nail clippers, the warranty for a piece of electronics that had stopped functioning years ago. There was a black book on top with an elastic ribbon holding it closed. I flipped the book open. It was probably just an address book, but just in case there were any $100 bills tucked between the pages, there weren't. It was full of handwriting instead. I almost threw it away. I had the mouth of the garbage bag open and was moving my hand toward it when a phrase jumped out at me. She has hid the book. I had to read it twice to make sure I was right the first time. Whoever wrote it had neat enough handwriting, but it was tightly slanted, and the S's and the A's looked nearly identical. That's wrong, I thought. It's either she hid the book or she has hidden the book. Pick one and commit. Like I said, I'm a freelance editor. The Chicago Manual of Style is tattooed on my soul. I'm pretty lenient about these things when editing fiction. Show me a character who uses whom correctly, and I'll show you a real prat. But she has hid the book? No. The next line was, I'm afraid she might have destroyed it, but there are no fresh ashes in the burn barrel. I went through the trash, but it was not there. It must be hidden. I asked her where it was, and she asked, had I lost something? But there was that look in her eyes like when she hid my keys. I sat down on the bed. Good God, was this Cockgrave's? And was she my grandmother? I could easily believe that Grandma would hide something and take pleasure in the other person looking for it. There's mean, and then there's pathological. Once you start calling up people to laugh when their dog dies, you're way over on the pathology side of the equation. On the other hand, Cockgrave had been getting on in years himself, and lots of old people get paranoid that other people are stealing things from them. I couldn't swear that Grandma was doing any such thing just because she was a nasty piece of work in other regards. I flipped to the next page. Still can't find the book. Checked all the shelves. Shades of the purloined letter. I won't leave without it. It's the last I've got of Ambrose. Cockgrave was clearly a trusting soul. He'd left the journal in his nightstand, and if Grandma was hiding his stuff, you'd think he'd realize she was probably reading this. Poor guy. I turned the page again. They were old and stuck together, so I had to tug my glove off to do it. It's in my head again, like a song that keeps replaying. When that happens, I read it in the book, and that makes it stop. But now, I can't. This must be what going mad feels like. I made faces, like the faces on the rocks, and I twisted myself about like the twisted ones, and I lay down flat on the ground like the dead ones. That seems to have helped. Maybe if I read it written here, it'll stop. At first, I thought that this was the moment when it all went bad. If I had shoved the book in the garbage bag before I read that, maybe it would have come out differently. If my stupid editor brain hadn't kicked in when I had opened the journal, maybe I would have been able to walk away. I can see myself, when I think of this, sitting on the bed, one leg tucked up under myself, the garbage bag draped over my other knee. I see myself from the outside, like a stranger, woman in her mid-30s, gaining weight no matter how often she takes the dog out jogging. Wavy brown hair, with a few strands stuck to her forehead and dust smudged across her face. And in her hand, the little black journal. But now, writing this, I think maybe it wouldn't have mattered. I was there, and I was not going to leave until I had cleaned the place out. Maybe everything would have happened anyway, and I would have had no map to guide me, even as poor and addled a map as Cockgrave's journal proved to be. At the time, though, I had no presentiment. I read that passage, and what I thought was, ugh, that's kind of creepy. Twisted myself about like the twisted ones? Yeesh. It was a weird thing to find written in a book by an old man who liked cribbage and read the newspaper for hours a day. It's in my head again, like a song that keeps replaying. Sounds like he's talking about an earworm, poor soul. Lord knows, I'd had songs stuck in my head before. TV theme songs were particularly bad. One time I wandered around for nearly 2 weeks, humming the theme to Cheers, until I had to sit down and actually watch an episode or go barking mad. This didn't seem much like a song. Then again, I've known people who get poetry stuck in their head. My college roommate used to recite Poe's El Dorado, and I don't think she even knew she was doing it sometimes. Of course, she was an English major. I didn't have time to keep reading a journal. I had a house to clean. I set it down on the nightstand and finished emptying the drawers. The closet was as bare as the rest of the room, a few suits of clothes, a pair of bedroom slippers, and a pair of scuffed leather shoes. 3 Time Life books on World War II, but that probably didn't mean anything. Books on World War II appear spontaneously in any house that contains a man over a certain age. I believe that's science. On the far side of the top shelf was an ancient manual typewriter. I groaned. It had to weigh a ton. Just looking at it made my back hurt. I was going to have to get on a chair, lift it out at shoulder height, and probably drop it on my foot in the process. Well, that was a concern for another day. I stuffed everything I could lift into the garbage bags, stripped the bed, and hauled the bag out to the truck. Come on, Bongo, let me show you the new digs. Bongo seemed cautiously pleased. He got up on the bed and made putting the sheets on extremely difficult anyway. I resigned myself to the red Christmas tree sheets smelling like hound. Most of my stuff does. For my next trick, I told him, I'm going to see if I can't excavate a counter in the kitchen. He accompanied me to the kitchen, discovered that I wasn't doing anything that would result in dog treats, and slumped to the linoleum with a tragic sigh. Unfortunately, there was only one bare patch of linoleum, so I was stepping over him every time I turned around. You're not helping. He let out another sigh. Occasionally, my dog sounds like he is deflating. I tried to sort Tupperware for about 5 minutes. Then I gave up and just swept the stacks into garbage bags. Bags full of wadded-up plastic bags got the same treatment. I can see the reason for keeping plastic bags around, but my grandmother had more than her own body weight in the things. I tried to think of a song to sing. I really had to get a radio for in here. The house was too quiet, and I twisted myself around like the twisted ones. That wasn't a song. I dismissed it and started the first song I could think of, which was one we sang at camp approximately 1,000 years ago. I woke up Sunday morning. I looked up on the wall. The beetles and the bedbugs were having a game of ball. Bongo let out another sigh from the bottom of his toes. I worked my way through the vast number of verses, including the one about dying in a sewer that the counselors wouldn't let us sing, and cleared a counter back to something that was probably a toaster. Corrosion had sealed it to the countertop. There was a fork sticking out of it, which seemed like a generally bad idea. Fortunately, the electrical cord had rotted through, so the toaster was harmless. I was a little more concerned about the cord that was still sticking out of the wall socket. There were 2 microwaves stacked on top of each other. One looked to be made of plastic, and one looked like it was made to withstand the atomic bomb. Somehow, I got about half the kitchen counters cleaned without electrocuting myself. The metal microwave was incredibly heavy. I made a mental note to go rent a handcart. I also uncovered a mouse nest and about 20 containers of ant poison, which sealed my resolve not to let Bongo run around loose in the house. I opened the refrigerator. It looked very dirty, but the air inside was cold. I dithered over scrubbing it out. Did it matter? It was ancient, and I was here to throw things away, but eventually decided that I didn't want my food to sit in a fridge that was covered in stains and mold. It occurred to me, somewhat belatedly, that there's a disease you get from mold that lives in closed-up refrigerators. But I was down on my knees wielding little green scrubby pads, and whatever it was, I was probably thoroughly exposed. So, you know, oh well. By the time I finished with the fridge, it was getting dark. I got back in the truck and drove into town for a drive-through meal eaten in the car. Bongo got another illicit cheeseburger. I would have to pick up groceries tomorrow, but the idea was exhausting. We went back. Well, home is the wrong word. We went back anyway. I'd left the porch light on and most of the lights in the downstairs. From outside, it looked almost like a normal house, with warm light spilling through the windows. Moths banged at the porch light. I sat in the car so long, looking at the house, that Bongo got bored and began chewing on his nails. So I sighed and pulled the keys out of the ignition and grabbed my suitcase out of the back seat. Come on, boy, let's go. Clutter aside, the house seemed solid enough. Probably wasn't going to fall down on my head. If I could just clear the junk out, we could put it on the market. Dad had made noises about splitting the money with me, and I sure wasn't in a position to turn money down. I told myself all this 3 or 4 times as I slogged up the steps, Bongo yanking at the leash.